Sullivan Show.
The Sullivan Show.
On City Talk 105.9.
This is The Sullivan Show, and it is just 2:05. Lots more to come today. After 3 o'clock, we get out of the studio and into the City Cafe. We'll catch up with all our entertainment news, but still to come now, in conversation with...
This is The Sullivan Show.
On City Talk 105.9.
In conversation with Dean. On City Talk 105.9.
Well, as you know, if you are a regular listener, this hour, every Thursday... we just sit back, put our feet up, get a cup of coffee, and just have a nice leisurely conversation with my special guest, who this week is 60s icon, star of that fantastic film, A Taste of Honey. It's our very own Liverpool girl, Rita Tushingham. Good afternoon, Rita.
Good afternoon.
Lovely to see you. We're just admiring the view there out of the window.
Oh, I love it, because I used to work backstage at Liverpool Rep, which is just next door to your building here, and often used to take the ferry across just to go back and just to come back to see that beautiful view.
Yeah.
I haven't been up here before, and it's just...
Oh, did you never come up here when it was a restaurant?
No.
It was a long time ago. But
yeah, the revolting restaurant. No, I'm not suggesting it was.
No.
Because we had, obviously, one in London that sort of stuck there.
Yeah. So you just mentioned there the ferry, and I love to take the ferry as well, and the skyline is changing. You must see some huge differences. When was the last time you were in Liverpool? It wasn't that long ago, anyway.
I was here a couple of weeks ago, actually.
You come up quite fairly regularly?
Yes, well, the last time I was here, I was with a very good friend of mine, Norma Heyman, who was given a fellowship from the John Moores University. So we went to Crosby and saw all those wonderful
statues.
Wonderful. Yeah, they're
the statues.
Absolutely stunning, aren't they?
Yeah.
It really is quite breathtaking. So I was here then, and then the cathedral, and they did it's just beautiful.
I've been to one of those ceremonies. They're quite spectacular, aren't they?
They're stunning, and the whole place is just, it was just lovely. Yeah. And so I was back then, now I'm back, and I'm seeing my family as well.
Have they given you one yet?
No, they haven't.
Honorary degree, why not?
I don't know.
I shall have to start a petition. Now, you mentioned there that you're back up you come back up on a regular basis, but you're here for a particular reason this time around.
That's right. There's a screening of a film that I did with Nick Rogue called Puffball at FACT this evening at 6:30. And so I'm here for that and then to do a Q&A, question and answers, after the film.
That's great. Well, what was that experience like?
To work with Nicholas Rowe. It was wonderful because from the very... I knew of Nick, obviously. I knew
had you met him
work.
Before, yeah.
And I'd met him, and he was a very good friend of friends of mine. And so when I met him, and the first day shooting, actually the first shot in the film was the first day shooting. And I just looked and I thought, because I love the visual.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh God, this is going to be so interesting because it looks quite stunning. And the lighting and everything, it was just very exciting. And the crew... just were hanging on his every word.
Just reminders of some of the films he's made, of course, Don't Look Now.
Yes.
Donald Sutherland.
Performance, which is just, Walkabout. Mm. Many really excellent films. Yeah. He does get... he's always had a tough time with the critics. And
why do you think that is, though?
I don't know. I think he's very... he makes you think. He's a very unusual director. And there are many layers in... his films, and he told me about one review he got, which was to do with performance.
And Mick Jagger was in that, wasn't
he? That's correct. And then one of the reviews said, even the cinema stank, which is brilliant. You always remember the bad reviews, that's why I never read them anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, just about 3 weeks ago, it was voted one of the top 10 films of all time. So it's really what you yourself get out of it. People, a critic, and, you know, there are many, they're either... they like the person or they don't, and it's all very personal, I think. And as long as it's constructive and not destructive, then that's fine. But that was not a very good thing to say. But look at it, it's been, you know, it's past the time, and it's right up to...
You're talking about there, you know, his films having different layers as well. And we go back to one of my favourites of his, which is Don't Look Now, and I could watch that over and over again and see something different each time.
This is what's interesting, because he does have all the visual, being a cinematographer and everything, so he brings all that in as well. So there's a wealth of things on the screen at the same time. And, you know, with Puffball, there are so many layers in it. You know, people, there's a lot of my characters suffering.
Yeah, what's it about?
Well, it's really to do with life, to do with love, passion, and grief, mostly, and what you long for in life and try to make happen. And it's to do with couples and, you know, them sort of falling out and eventually things perhaps working out for them, or maybe not, because what one person thinks is right for someone is not necessarily what they would wish for.
And where did the script come from? Is it based on a novel? Or
It's based on a novel called Puffball by Faye Weldon. And the script...
Who's a great writer, sort of.
Oh, yes, she's wonderful. She's an extraordinary woman. And Dan Weldon, her son, did the screenplay.
Ah, right, right. You're listening to City Talk 105.9. I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Rita Tushingham. Now, Rita, you said you shot that film over in Ireland. What was that like?
Well, I love working in Ireland. I've done five films in Ireland, and it's just so relaxing, because I think we get on very well, Liverpudlians and the Irish, and it's always beautiful countryside, and it's very laid back, and people are very gentle, and nothing, you don't feel that they're pressured. And we were in a place called Monaghan.
Which part of Ireland is that?
It's about an hour and a half out of, we're nearly on the border, actually.
Right.
And there were a lot of, in this film, there's a lot of things that go on. My character creates certain potions to help make things happen. And it's not, in any sense, witchcraft, but there's sort of magic things go on that she's learned over the, you know, from her great-great-grandmother, all these secrets are passed
down. Is she a white witch?
Well, she's got white hair, but I don't know about white witch. But in Monaghan, there are more sets of twins than any other place in Ireland. That I was told that. I might be wrong. And also, there were a lot of people who were curers, and I met someone, and they the secret of the cure, it could be the woman I met had the cure of the sprain. And so
what does that mean? What does she lay on hands? Or
Yes, and also there's certain prayers that they do, and then they send you away, and then they'll call you. And it is like a healing, only it's a different sort of form of this is passed on through generations. And I met this woman, she was very interesting. She said, "Oh, perhaps I'll give it to you." And I thought, "Oh, no, don't.
But what's the power?
I thought, no, and that's not correct, obviously. Just because I'm in a film and I'm playing this character is not right that you should be handing this movie. But very interesting and beautiful, beautiful countryside.
And then it's also, as well, you mentioned there that you've done a few films over there. But Ireland's very welcoming to the film industry, isn't it?
Oh, yes, certainly. No, they are. And, you know, it the crews are so fantastic as well. We had some, you know, there was a mixture. And from Ireland and Northern Ireland, and also some people came from Britain. It was just a great mixture. They're laid back, and there's a sense of humour, which I must say, you do get with British crews. You always get that, and Irish crews. So it's just, I love my job, you see. So that's just a bonus when it all works like that.
Do you enjoy mixing with the crew?
Oh, yeah, very much so, because I'm always fascinated by, I love to see how it's set up, the shot, the visual is very important. And from very early on, my very first film, working with Tony Richardson, the director, and I learned from him that he not only cast his cast, but he cast his crew. And so that's
how it's very important, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is, because you're picking someone that you think is the best in their profession. And I just sort of used to talk to them, so that's how it was for me, and it always has been. And I just love to know how everything works. And sometimes if I've got time, I'm doing a film last year with Brenda Blethyn called The Calling, and I had time waiting. I was a nun, a Liverpool nun,
yeah.
Liverpool supporter nun too.
Right.
And so I just helped with wardrobe and breaking down clothes and things. I love to be sort of part of the whole
thing. Great, part
thing.
Of the team.
Yeah. It is. What would you do there? It is. It's like a family, really.
Brenda Blethyn's an extraordinary woman, isn't she?
Oh, she's wonderful.
I've met her. The first time I met her was at a garden party at Buckingham Palace, which was extraordinary. We've got a mutual friend, so she knew all about me, but she's lovely.
Oh, she's great. And we had great fun. In fact, I saw her a couple of weeks ago in the Czech Republic at Kalavivari, because we were at the festival with Puffball, and she was on the jury. Puffball was not in competition, just screening there. They had a Nick Rogue sort of season, and she's just
She was on the jury, did you say?
Yes, she was on the jury, which is a great thing to do, because literally when you're on the jury, and I've done it, I love it, you just literally see the films, and it's you don't have any other responsibilities apart from sitting there and seeing the films, obviously making notes and remembering what you've seen, but it's such a lovely place there. I've been before to Calavivar, it's lovely.
Yeah, great. So you mentioned there your was it your very, very first film, A Taste of Honey?
A Taste of Honey. Well, when I was working at Liverpool Rep, backstage as a student.
Well, tell us about that. How did you get involved in that?
Well, I'll tell you, I always wanted to act. I didn't wake up and say, oh, I think I'd like to act. You know, yeah. It was something I wanted to do.
From what age?
I think when I was born, I took a bow, you know.
Yeah.
and I always wanted to do it. And so I wrote to Liverpool Rep. I wrote 60 letters saying, please, can I come to the Rep? And eventually they said, yes, come, because it was Christmas season, they were doing pantomime. And my first role there was the back legs of a horse and a rabbit.
Did you have to have an equity card?
You became a member then if you were there. And then when I was working backstage then and a student ASM, I read in the paper they were looking for an unknown actress to play the role of Jo in A Taste of Honey. And as you do, when you're young, I think this is when you grasp these opportunities, which you have to do in this profession. So I wrote and sent a photograph, and they wrote back saying, come to London. So I thought, my mum said, we're going. And so I went, and I met Tony Richardson, did some improvisation and something from A Taste of Honey, from the play. I'd never seen the play, it had been on stage. And then they called back and said, we'd like you to do a screen test. And then I came back again. And then went again, then came back again. They said, I got a phone call at the Rep and the stage doorman said, Rita, the phone. And I rushed down and they said, you've got the part. Tony said, you've got the part and you'll start in 8 weeks. But it took much longer than that because they didn't want an unknown to play the role. So he fought for me to do it.
I'm talking to my special guest this hour in conversation with Rita Tushingham. We're just talking about her first film, A Taste of Honey. That must have been quite an extraordinary experience to, you know, your first audition for a film?
Yeah, it was my first audition.
Yeah, first audition.
Actually,
yeah.
And it was a wonderful experience, because then when we started, then I went to London to work with Tony for about 4 weeks at the Royal Court, so we get to know each other doing a play called The Changeling with Mary Yore, and then I met John Osborne, who's part of Woodfall Films, and Oscar Lewenstein, and all the people there. So when I started, I knew people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they were fantastic. And then when it came out, that's when you realise, you don't think about it, it's just something that I love doing. And then suddenly you're travelling to America, you're going to Cannes, because I was very, I won in Cannes and stuff and things, and suddenly things are... But the thing that you had to remember was, because I learned at a very early age not to believe everything people said, because it's always, oh, darling, this and oh, darling, that. And I thought, what are you talking about, darling? They don't know me that well and all this and stuff. So you just took everything with a pinch of salt. So then I think I remained grounded, at least I hope I did, and just went on.
Because how old were you then?
19.
Mm.
And I went on this great journey and going all over the world, and with A Taste of Honey, and also, you know, doing other films. This is what's so, apart from loving the job, it's great because you work in many countries and learn a lot about those countries when you're working in them.
I'm talking to my special guest this hour in conversation with Rita Tushingham here on City Talk 105.9.
Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Hi, this is Tricia Goddard, and every Sunday night from 8 o'clock, I'll be discussing the issues that matter to you and those close to you. Of course, I'll be enlisting the help of experts and ordinary people who've been there, seen it, and done it. So join me, Tricia Goddard, this Sunday and every Sunday here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Talk to Tricia, Sunday evening at 8 on City Talk 105.9.
Love your new staircase.
Great, isn't it? Had it made to order at Home Makeover. Well, here's their website, homemakeover.co.uk.
Oh, look, fully fitted kitchens.
Gorgeous fitted bedrooms too. Handcrafted at their Liverpool showroom.
You know, I reckon Home Makeover could completely transform the look of my home.
Absolutely. Why not go and see their new showroom on the Erskine Industrial Estate? And don't forget, homemakeover.co.uk.
I will. Can't have your home looking better than mine now, can I?
Are your windows old, shoddy, flaky, even rotten? Tired of painting but think you can't afford to replace them? Well, think again. Because right now at SaveStar UK, if you buy the windows and doors for the front of your house, you get get the back done completely free. Restrictions may apply. Or you can get a whopping 55% off your total bill. You choose the offer that saves you the most money. There's free fitting, flexible monthly payments to suit you. And if that's not enough, there's free Pilkington K-Glass. If you're looking for a whopping deal, call SafeStar UK now on 0800 106 107 for a free quotation.
If you're a homeowner or rent from a private landlord and receive certain benefits, here's some heartwarming news from Warmer Heating.
Under the government's Warm Front scheme, you could claim £2,700 towards a new gas or electric heating system from Warmer Heating.
Even if you're not on benefits and you're 60 or over, you may still be entitled to a £300 rebate towards the repair or replacement of your current heating system.
Find out more. Call Warmer Heating free on 0800 377 7755 or visit warmerheating.co.uk.
Celebrate Liverpool's unique love of all things fashion and style at the Business Improvement District Fashion Event in Williamson Square today from 12:30. This showcase from City Centre retailers will give you plenty of inspiration for that perfect outfit. Thursdays are alive after 5 with the Business Improvement District, creating a cleaner, safer, vibrant City Centre with City Talk 105.9.
In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
You're listening to City Talk 105.9, in conversation with me, Dean Sullivan, on The Sullivan Show. My special guest this hour, every week, as you know, if you're a regular listener, we have a special guest in conversation with this week. It's Rita Tushingham. We're just talking about your first film there, Rita, Taste of Honey, which I'm not just saying this because you sat opposite me there or whatever, but I love that film. I would never, ever get tired of watching it. It must have been extraordinary for you to make that, because you must have been learning on the spot.
You know, it because of having someone like Tony and the cast, Dora Bryan and Robert Stevens and Murray Melvin and Paul Dan, it just worked, and the crew. That, as I say to you, is so important. So we just got on and did it. And being a small cast, I think, probably helped as well.
Did you make it all in London?
No, we shot in Manchester.
Yeah.
And in Salford.
Yeah.
And then in London, we used the Royal Court sort of, they had a workshop that we used, and that was used for the location of the flat and things.
Yeah, yeah. And just give us a little brief synopsis of the story of it.
Well, it's about a young teenage girl and her mum, who were always sort of flitting from flat to flat, not paying the rent, and so you see us getting out the window and going to another one. But the mother feels that she doesn't have a man in her life, she's met someone, and that's more important to her than her daughter, and her daughter's quite lonely, so the mother goes off with this fellow and marries him, and she's sort of left on her own, and she meets this sailor from Ghana and spends a night with him and becomes pregnant. And then he goes away, and the mother's off enjoying herself with her marriage. And she's befriended by Murray Melvin's character, Jeff, and he sort of looks after her and takes her under his wing.
So she has the baby?
You never see it in the film.
No.
And then he looks after her, and he's gay, and he just wants to care for her. They meet in a shoe shop. And things. She's selling shoes. And so that's how it is. And it's a very touching story, but also there's a lot of humour in it. And in the end, the mother comes back and kicks him out while I'm sleeping. It's just before I have the baby. And he's sort of kicked out, and the mother comes back and says, right, I'm taking care of you now. And so it's a very touching story. I mean, I couldn't believe, but Sheila Delaney wrote that play 50 years ago.
I know. And she was very young, wasn't she?
She was 19.
When she wrote it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Now, the word gay is never mentioned in that film, is it?
No, nothing. It's just he's there and he's looking after her. But people, I sometimes get people saying, well, don't you think that's rather degrading? And don't you think it's... But, you know, how can I answer that? It was written that many years ago, and it's not. I think it's a wonderful relationship between... Yeah. Joe and Jeff.
And he's a great actor, isn't he?
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah. Is he still around?
Yes, he is. He has his own theatre group.
Right. Do you keep in touch?
I haven't sort of spoken to him for quite a while.
Now, of course, you mentioned the mother there in the film, of course, played by the wonderful Dora Bryan, the extraordinary Dora Bryan. Yeah. What was it like working with her?
Oh, it was great from day one, really, because she's from the north of England. So it was just, I was totally accepted, because don't forget, I was an unknown, and I hadn't really acted. I'd played some small roles at Liverpool Rep, but nothing at all, nothing to do with film. And they just sort of took me on. And I think because everyone believed also in Tony, because they wanted, Tony fought with the studios because they wanted Audrey Hepburn to play the role. And he said, absolutely not. I want her to do it, which was great. You know, without Tony, I would probably never have had a film career.
I couldn't possibly imagine Audrey Hepburn playing that part.
Well, I said that they wanted a name.
Yeah.
You know, and she was stunning and a wonderful, wonderful actress, but probably not quite right for... And I think I was the right age to play it. I think if you're too old and you're playing a young character, you just tend to act more to be young, which you're not really like, but you think, oh, I must play younger and stuff. And so I was lucky that it came along when it did. And then I did quite a few films with Woodfall. I did a film called Girl with Green Eyes and a film called The Knack, directed by Richard Lester, who's a great... friend, so I was lucky that...
Do you think they picked you because of this extraordinary look that you do have? You still have it now. You sat opposite me here now, and, you know...
You mean
so,
that?
Yeah, those, you know, those wonderful big eyes. Because in a sense, it's sort of portrayed for that part of the, you know, that certain naivety about her.
I think that the character had to have that, and obviously I had that because I was quite naive. I hadn't really been to London before, and I think it's just what comes over on camera, really. And I love the camera, and I think if you allow it, it can get right into your soul, because you can see some people that you feel it stops. It's almost you feel like there's a whole very strong glass window between the person and the camera. And I just was very... I love being on the set, and I love the camera. And maybe not. I didn't choose to. It's just maybe you're born with something like that. It didn't worry me, the technical thing. So perhaps that, in a way, helped. And also, I did look sort of different to a lot of people that had come before. And you know, in the 60s, when you had Albert Finney and Tom Courtney and people like that, suddenly they were accepting different-looking people. We didn't have to look too polished. Or, you know, if you were playing a character role, you had to... You signed a...
And the working class was coming into its own as far as film was concerned.
Absolutely. The breakthrough. It started, didn't it? Well, and then you were allowed to do things. You were accepted, because what it changed for me was, you know, when you went to places, you'd be invited to say, when I went to then Czechoslovakia, I was invited by the British ambassador to go to the embassy. I would never have been invited if I hadn't been in that business. So it opened a lot of doors, and also you learn a lot from it.
They're talking about you know, you loving the camera, but most definitely the camera loves you. And that sort of thing you said briefly there, it could be something that you're born with, because nobody can teach you that.
No, you can't. And this is what I think. I didn't go to drama school, and this is what I think. And I think about acting, you can teach people obviously technique and voice and everything, but you can't give someone soul. And either it's there, it's not. And it doesn't mean to say you have to be the greatest actor in the world, but if the camera sees something, you're very lucky. And some people have it and some people don't. You can, I mean, when you look at certain people, maybe off camera, and then suddenly see them on, it's quite illuminating, really, to see them. And I don't think you should dig deep into what it is. If you've got it, you know, just don't think, oh, I treasure it, but just... sort of, I'm not saying I think I have it, but I think people should just accept that and get on.
Now, you're talking about The Taste of Honey. I'm talking to my special guest this hour in conversation with Rita Tushingham here on City Talk 105.9. You said there, Rita, you know, that was your first break, you know, and the huge success that it was, of course, and it's still remembered now, and, you know, it's there in the history of English films. And you said it opens lots of doors. And here's one door it opened, because one of our listeners has emailed in a picture and said, show this to Rita and ask her about it. What's this one all about?
Oh.
Just describe, can you see it from there?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, that was when I was in India.
Yes.
Making a film with James Ivory.
Right.
And, yes, George was there.
George Harrison.
So we did. And my character was sort of like a hippie and was really adored this sitar player.
Was he in the film as well, then?
No, he wasn't. But we sort of... knew each other, and so, yes, that's a photograph.
And what was the title of that film?
It was called The Guru.
Oh, The Guru. Fond memories?
Very much, yeah, indeed.
So you went out to India to shoot that one?
Yes, I loved it. It was great. Well, James Ivory, of course, as you know, He's done many films.
Yeah, great filmmaker.
But that's it. You see what I mean? Going to all these countries and working in them. And indeed, someone's still in touch with me now that was on the film from India.
Brilliant. So let's take us right back then to where it all started. It started in Garston, didn't it, for you?
Yeah, I was lived in Garston for 3 years, and my dad had a grocer's shop there, one in Hunts Cross, and we moved to Hunts Cross. And then I went to La Sagesse Convent.
Oh, yes, that's gone now.
I know, I can't
They knocked it down, because I used to go on the bus every day past there, because I went to St. Margaret's further up the road.
And it's gone, and I went there, and then I started, I said I'd always wanted to act, and my dad said, well, you're going to have to take up a profession, you know, something to fall back
on. What were you like at school? Did you enjoy school?
Hated it.
Well, Lars suggested, and just tell people, was that a Catholic girls' school with nuns?
Yeah, and very, very strict.
Yeah.
The reason I went there was I was going to go to Highton College, and I was run over when I was 7. The car went right over me, and I mean, I'm very lucky to be here. And so my parents thought, well, we don't want her to cross too many roads. Let's let her go somewhere where there's not so many roads to cross. But the thing was, so they chose La Sagesse. But the road I had to cross was the one I was run over on. So there's your Liverpool logic. But I didn't like the sort of, it was all regimented. And I liked it to be more spontaneous, which you can't be in school anyway. Mm. It's much freer now. But I used to sort of want to do things in the lunch hour and get a group of girls together and try and do plays and things like that. But the nuns didn't like that. But when I
There wouldn't have been drama on the curriculum, would there? As a lesson, no.
No, no. And a lot of our mirrors were covered and everything. And I used to think, who's that? Oh, it's me. You know, because they covered mirror. Mm. It was quite strict.
Yeah.
But I went back when I'd done A Taste of because a film was made of me, and they were so welcoming and lovely. And I think when you're a child, you look at teachers and you think, they're not sort of real. Mm. You can't imagine them as being just a normal person.
Yeah.
And they were very sort of welcoming, very proud of what I'd done, so that was nice.
So you think, you said when you were born you took a bow, so acting was in your blood, wherever it came from. Where do you think it came from? Is there any history that was in your family?
My mum liked amateur dramatics, but no, there's no one. I had a great-great uncle, Johnny, who was an artist, but there's no one else. And where does it come from? You don't know, do you? Because it's not, as I say, I didn't sit down and say what you want to do when you grow up. It was it was just
so acting. You had this notion then as a young person that that's what you wanted to do. How did you go about sort of, I don't know, finding out more about it? Or did you go for drama lessons? Or did you go for coaching, elocution?
I went to elocution lessons. In fact, Norma Heyman.
Paid off, really.
Yeah. And because sometimes when I get in cabs, people say, and I say I'm from Liverpool because I support Liverpool football. And they say, you don't sound like you're from Liverpool. And I say, well, I'm being posh and all sort of that. But,
I love it when you slip back into a Liverpool accent.
But so I went to Mrs. Harold Ackley. Crane Theatre.
Well known.
Yes, and she, Norma Heyman, Malcolm McDowell went, I went, and she was amazing woman. And so I suppose that I did, and also I took singing lessons.
Was she of the old school, the old brown cow? And
Oh, no, brown cow. Because you'd knock on the door and she'd open it, and she had glasses that were so thick, and she'd say, hello, darling. And then she'd go, who is it? Because she couldn't see it. And I always remember her long, long red fingernails and things. But she was quite extraordinary, bright red hair. Mm-hmm. So I went,
you imagine of of a drama teacher of that period.
And she had wonderful photographs all over the wall of actors and people that she taught. And so that's what I did. But it was really Liverpool rep. I wanted to work at doing whatever. And so I worked
backstage. Had you been to see plays there then?
Oh, yes, because my mum went to every play, so she would take me along.
Right.
And so that's what I did. So, and I never thought working backstage. And then, of course, I wanted to be an actress. I never thought of film. And film is my absolute love.
But going back to the theatre, though, you know, in those first heady days, did you used to get a sense of the smell of the theatre? Because that's what
I
had.
You do, don't you? Because you get it's the sort of scenery, everything about it. And doing what I did, I learned all about doing sort of props and also doing the book, which is where you do your prompting and working and helping with the scenery. And I used to go to George Henry Lee's and say, and I thought I was so special. I'm from Liverpool Rep. Can we borrow that very expensive tea service? they give it you. Yeah, it worked, yeah, you know. So yeah, things like that. So I learned the whole sort of workings of
theatre. And working backstage, you get to see what the magic is all about, don't you? How you put the magic together.
What it's not about.
Yes, yeah. You know, the holes in the curtains and the costumes and things.
Yeah, and how you used to up all those stairs doing the calls, you know, half an hour, please, and then 15 minutes, please, and things
so
like that.
So you literally used to knock on the dressing room door.
And sometimes if they didn't answer, I thought, anyone answered to the leading lady and said, thank you, darling. Because I'd said, did you hear? And they, thank you, darling. And
what sort of people were working there then? Any names that we'd know?
They were wonderful. Mm. Delia Kari, George Penzotti, Trevor Baxter. A lot of...
because, of course, in those days...
Hillary Crane.
Yeah.
Oh, and Bill Kenwright was in the Panto. Yeah. He played another... I think he played... Did he play a walrus or was it a rabbit? But then he was in...
No, I think he'd be the walrus. I can see him in that part, yes.
And so there were quite a few people...
Of course, and I was going to say, in those days, the repertory company was very important in this right across the country.
Absolutely, and also the good thing about Liverpool was it was 3 weeks, so you didn't have to change the set every week. I mean, that would be a killer, having to do that. But so it was good. So I did learn, and then I did Christmas shows, review, and things like that. So it was really, for me, that was a real learning experience.
I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Rita Tushingham. You're listening to The Sullivan Show on City Talk 105.9. How long were you there for then, Rita?
I was there for 2 years.
Right.
And then I sort of, just before I did Taste of Honey, I did a play called Thark, Ben Travers.
And Farce.
With Farce. And I played the maid, probably throwing my arms around everywhere. And John Thor, who joined the company, was the butler. And I did that, and then I left and went to London.
So when you were making A Taste of Honey, when you were in London, where did you stay? Did they put you up? Did your mum come with you?
No, I went on my own. She came with me sort of for the auditions and things. And then I was staying in a place, you know, Sloane Avenue? In a place called Nelgwyn House.
Oh, well, that's very appropriate. There.
Yes,
very Nelgwyn.
Good.
Yes.
All those oranges clanking. And then I stayed there, and then when we were shooting.
So did you get a taste for London then?
Yes, I did. And people say, oh, what was it like? But I thought that's what London was like, because it was really beginning to happen, and the Royal Court was incredibly important. And John Osborne was a huge supporter of mine, and it was really great. So...
Because just
to
remind us, John Osborne and, you know, Kitchen Sink
Look
Drama. Yeah, then the, of course,
the entertainer,
you know, very real.
Yes, and a stuff. Wonderful patriot for me, a wonderful writer. And so they sort of took me under their wing. And so I was there, and I was doing, I did a play at the Royal Court called The Knack, which did very well. Oh, and I did Midsummer Night's Dream at the Playhouse.
Who did you play?
Not at the Playhouse, I beg your pardon, at the Royal Court. Yeah. I played Hermia.
Oh, right.
And the reviews, it said the reviews were ill-lit by moonlight. And they said that Puck, played by Alfie Lynch, looked like an escaped convict. And that you could see the wires twanging. I mean, they were just awful, but there were people in it, Nicole Williamson, Jimmy Bolam, Samantha Egger, and we did a Sunday night production of Twelfth Night with Albert Finney and people. So that was all good, but I wasn't really, I must say, not that great at Shakespeare.
Do you ever think you'll see an era like that come back? You throw all those names, and you know, these people you're talking, they're household names now, aren't they? You know, and it's of a generation.
I don't think it can come back, because it's different now, and it's more, you made a film then, you in a sense, I suppose it didn't just rely on what it took in the box office over that weekend, and now it does. There's so much on, with anything, isn't it, in the entertainment business now, oh, if it's not doing well over the weekend, take it off, or do this, or they preview films, and people, you know, give their views on it, just ordinary cinema goers, and sometimes, it can really affect a film. I think then you had more freedom, and they were very, very open then, and you were allowed to have, you take an idea, and they would be very receptive of that idea.
And where's the place now for training new writers?
I honestly don't know. That's someone you'd have to talk to, Norma Heyman, because she's a producer, and she would know a lot more about that. She's a good Liverpool girl. She would be able to tell you all about that.
In conversation with Rita Tushingham, City Talk 105.9.
Dine somewhere different. Dine at Jallands Bridewell Campbell Square. Once a 19th century police station, this elegant and unique restaurant just has to be experienced. And Monday to Friday between 12 and 3, you can now enjoy our delicious lunch menu. Dishes start from just $2.95. So for hearty food, fine wine and live music from the Boston Piano, book your table or sell at Jallands Bridewell, Campbell Square, Argyle Street, Liverpool. Call 709-4195.
Everybody's escaping to a better job. citytalkjobs.co.uk.
The Tasker's Blue Ticket Sale is all you'd expect from a sale, and more. And it's on now.
And that means free sliding track when you buy any of our stylish Stanley Mirror Wardrobe Systems.
The Tasker's Blue Ticket Sale. Long Lane Aintree and Wavertree Road, Liverpool.
To attend a uni with the best graduate employment rates in the region.
To experience outstanding facilities.
To study and succeed.
To find exciting new courses.
To discover a life with more meaning.
That's why I chose Liverpool Hope University.
The Liverpool Hope Open House takes place from August the 14th to the 22nd. To find out more, click hope.ac.uk or call 0151 291 3899.
K-Seal Glass were voted Best Business on Merseyside in the Liverpool Echo Enterprise Champions Awards 2006.
And since then, we've been going from strength to strength. Although whether we're stronger than our laminated, toughened or fire-rated glass is something we'll never know.
Manufacturing and supplying all types of glass all over the Northwest, K-Seal offer quality, reassurance and a product you can trust.
Find out more. Call today on 0151 653 3777.
K-Seal. Seeing things clearly.
Your choice of legends in the evening on City Talk 105.9. City Sport, including legends John Aldridge.
It's Johnny Aldridge again! 2-1!
Ian St. John. Ian Snowden. And new signing Graham Sharp.
What a goal by Graham Sharp! An important one for Everton!
KFC drives you home on Radio City 96.7. On Magic 1548. The legends of the 60s, 70s and more. Your only choice of legends in the evening. Radio City. Magic. And City Talk 105.9.
In conversation with Dean on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back. I'm in conversation with my special guest this hour, Rita Tushingham. And I was just, I thought I was going to have a bit of a coughing fit before we went to the break. And Rita solved it by giving me one of her magic sweets, which has sort of calmed my throat and my chest down a bit. Thank you for that.
Pleasure.
Talking about the taste of honey, Tony Richardson, of course, an icon of the film world, but also as well, you worked with David Lean, Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, yeah, David
Lean. How did that come about?
It's very strange how it came about, because I was shooting The Knack, which Richard Lester directed, and one of the crew came in and said, "Here, oh, you look at that," and it's on the front of the Evening Standard. You're in David Lean's film. I said, look, he says you're in Dr. Zhivago. And that's how I heard it. Literally, I promise you, that was how I heard about it. But that was a great experience. And working with him and Sir Alec
Guinness. Great director.
He was quite extraordinary.
What do you think it was about him that made him
different
from the rest?
I don't know what is it. It's, you're born with it. And he
had a great eye, though, didn't he?
Yeah, and also, of course, he was an editor before he became a director, which often is very good. But the scenes that I had in Zhivago were done. We were away from the rest of the cast. We went to the Spanish-Portuguese border.
Who do you play?
I played the daughter of Lara and Zhivago. And it's sort of discovered. It's never said, but because of what happens in the scene. But it was great because we literally every night we all sort of had dinner together. So in a sense, I got to know him quite well, David Lean, because it was a more relaxed atmosphere rather than at the end of the day you all go back to your hotels and he's got rushes and things like that. It was and he would take his time. He literally would, and he'd know what he wanted, and then he would go and shoot it. He would not be rushed. I mean, you don't have that luxury now. You don't. But he had that, so we just went through it quite slowly, and when he got what he wanted, that was it. He prinned.
When you have a situation like that, when you're working in that sort of environment, do you have to remind yourself that it's work as opposed to it's fun? Do you ever say to yourself, God, aren't I lucky to be doing what I'm doing?
Yes, every day you say that, because, and you must never take it for granted, never, never, never. I love doing what I'm doing, and it is a joy. Some days you've got scenes and you think, oh, God, this is difficult, and never, never get lured into thinking, oh, as you would know, we'll do this quite quickly. Never think anything's easy, because it isn't, because the ones that look on paper, it's like saying, and the army came over the hill. That's just a line, isn't it? Then you've got like 3,000 extras. But, no, I've always had fun, but I've always, and when you've got scenes that are difficult, and, you know, you've got to break down and things like that, then you have to keep yourself a bit away from it. Because, and I'm always nosy because I want to know what's going on and things like that. But mostly you keep your humour and you just get on and do it. And you're disciplined, so you can have your fun, but you must be disciplined and do the job.
And what approach do you make when you know you've got a particular part?
Well, when I read something, it's almost like I see it going on above my head. It's like a film sort of strip. And then
you have to look at it as a film.
I just see it. I can't explain it to you, but when I'm reading it, I can see it happening. And then it starts to work its way in. Well, you're an actor. You know, it just works its way in, and things start visiting you. Or, and as an actor, we observe, and I think, and I don't think you sit and look at people and think, oh, look at that. You store a lot without realizing you're storing them. And then you'll suddenly start seeing people that are similar to the character that you're playing. Because in Puffball, the character of Molly, I saw quite a lot of people like her, which were around anyway, but I wasn't focusing on as much. And it just sort of enters, and you're walking down the street and suddenly something will come in, or you're going through things, and not sort of conscious, but it suddenly starts being part of you. But I don't mean you take it home, because but it just starts entering, and in a little bit of the jigsaw starts sort of taking.
When you say you don't take it home, I mean, I learned the hard way when I was playing the character in the soap I used to be in, because I had a particularly harrowing storyline that went on for many, many months. Mm. That there was no joy in it. There was joy in playing it, you know, and the challenge of, you know, coming up to meeting the mark. But I used to find myself getting quite low and quite down about it all. And I used to find it very hard to leave it behind and shake it off. Are you like that? Or are you able to just come off the set and it's gone?
No, I come off and it goes, because you can't take it home. You know, if you're playing a murderess, it's not very handy, is it? If you meet your neighbour and stab them. But so I do try to leave it behind. But I do find that when I'm... I go in the morning, and you know that there are certain things that you have to reach. You know yourself, you can't get there too soon because you've nowhere else to go. So it's really, you really have to control and let it go when you do. But that, afterwards, you're a bit exhausted, but then you leave it and it's gone. You can't take it home. Otherwise, then where does the playing begin and real life? You've got to have that cut off.
Are you passing your skills on to anybody else?
Oh.
Do you take classes or...?
No, I don't. I love to talk to people and things, and they'll ask you questions. But I like to sort of them to ask me, and I can answer and things like that. And, you know, this is my experience. It might not be right for them, but you can only say what it's like. And when people say, oh, how do I get into the business, or how do you've really, as you know, you've got to have that fire in your belly, you've got to have the passion, because there are so many knocks that you get, and things are said that one of the very few jobs, apart from being the Prime Minister of England, that you get criticised doing. I mean, if a dentist does a bad filling, you don't go, it's not in the paper and all that, you just don't go back to that dentist or whatever the job is. But with us, it's you have to be, in a sense, quite tough, I think. And that's what Liverpool has done for me. It's made me strong. It's where my roots are, and Liverpool is very important to me, and I'm proud of being a Liverpudlian, and that's probably it. But there's many things. You mustn't take it personally, because there's, as you know, there's one role, and there might be, well, for Taste of Honey, there were quite a couple of thousand people, but only one person's going to get it. So don't take it personally. If anyone wants to act, they have to keep on and going. And it's not a personal thing. It's just that your face doesn't fit, or you walk into the room and you don't look like the right person.
My special guest in conversation with Rita Tushingham here in City Talk 105.9. Rita, you mentioned the need. You've got to have that fire in your belly. You've got to have that determination. Earlier on, you said, you wrote 60 letters to the Playhouse before you ever got in. So yeah. Determination is important, isn't it?
It is. I think certainly when you're starting out, and I do believe we have luck. There's so much to do with luck in this business. It was lucky that I read that they were looking for an unknown. And being young, I went for that. And I think sometimes, I always think of luck as being balloons flying. And if you don't grab it, it'll take a while for the next one to come along. But grab them, go for it.
Nice analogy to make.
But you've nothing to lose, have you? And perhaps everything to gain.
Also, you say that about luck and... And almost when you're starting out in your career, you do have that naivety, don't you? That you do have that belief, well, I'll get this part. It will be mine.
But it's what gets you through, because if you realise, now you realise how important a film is. I mean, I really can't watch myself. It makes me feel so nervous. And the very good thing about Tony Richardson was he didn't let any of us go to rushes. That's how I learned. And I've never been to rushes. And I think that's good, because when you're playing a role, you're looking for the wrong things. You're looking, do I do this? You're not looking at it as the character, which is what a director looks at like, and how it all fits in. But you're looking at it as yourself. And that's sort of something that was a very good learning curve.
Very interesting, because when people used to say to me, do you watch yourself on screen, on TV? And I used to say, no. I said, because really, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
I'm only interested in what I'm doing on the day, on my work on the day.
Yeah.
That's where I get my great satisfaction from. I may watch it occasionally to think, I wonder if did I get that? Did I achieve what I wanted to achieve? So it's interesting that the notion that people have is they think that all actors and actresses are big show-offs and just want to, see themselves all the time, standing in front of the mirror or watching themselves on the screen, and it's not the case.
No, it's not. And also, we're shy, and people don't understand that either. But I do think you've got to... You're looking at yourself, and And also, you're in clothes that you probably would never wear, and all those things. So nothing is right. So you have to trust the person who's holding the reins, which is the director, and that's it. And just keep away from it. I really can't. It makes me feel, talking about it makes me feel sick. I know it sounds neurotic, but I can't.
We'll move on then. It must have been interesting to do an awfully big adventure. Belle Bainbridge's, I think it started off as a play, did it, or a book, novel?
Yes, as a novel, yeah.
And then it was adapted as a play.
That's right, Mike Newell directing. And funnily enough, my youngest daughter, Aisha, who's a post-production supervisor, worked with, on Mona Lisa Smile, worked with Mike.
And so did that involve coming back to the Playhouse?
No, we shot... They were shot in Dublin.
Right.
I know Beryl Bainbridge. Dame Beryl Bainbridge. And she's wonderful. That was interesting, and working with Alan Armstrong, who played husband and wife, who played in a couple of things together.
It's a great story, because of course it must have reflected your early day. I'm a bit earlier than you were there, but similar sort of things about the rep.
It did, because Beryl was a student at Liverpool Rep, so it was really from her experience of being there. So we often talk about that and things. She's got a great love for Liverpool.
You've had you're having a fantastic career in films, and some wonderful parts that you played, and that wonderful contribution you've made to the world of film. There must have been some lean times.
Well, you have them, and the thing is, that goes with the job. And you mustn't start, as I said, you don't get neurotic about things like that, because that's what it is. And I always think you can do so much, and if it doesn't work out, then you move on to the next. And you get times when, transitional period, when you're not playing young people anymore, and so you go through it, and as I say, there's only one actor for the role. But I've been lucky. I've been doing quite a few very interesting films.
And what's coming up next? I know you're back up. You're up. Just reminded, you're here in Liverpool for
staying with my brother Peter, my sister-in-law Beryl, and I've been approached to do my autobiography.
Oh, interesting.
And that I'm sort of thinking about and sort of doing.
That, would you be excited to do that?
I don't know. I know myself too well, so I might find it a bit boring. It might be interesting, but I don't want it to be actory. I really don't. I want it to be about life and all the things that, you know, we're all touched by the same things. And sometimes people think if you're in the business and it's all glamorous and you're not touched, you're most certainly we're all touched with all things in our life and would happen in every family. And I wanted to be about that and the work I did and the people I met. And I wanted to, most of all, to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm. So you're here for, you're a patron of Fact.
Yes.
You're at this event tonight.
Yes,
showing
indeed.
Puffball.
Showing Puffball at 6:30.
It's your latest film, of course.
Yes.
And the question and answer session afterwards?
Yes, there is. That's after the film, yes. Nick likes to do question and answers before the film, and people who haven't seen the film, they don't quite know what to ask about the film because I haven't seen it. So, yeah, I'm doing it after the film.
Great. And, you know, obviously you said your brother's still in Liverpool, and
yeah.
you're a regular visitor to Liverpool, and I don't know whether you were here yesterday, but I'm sure you must have heard all the fuss that was going on about this new think tank report.
What
do you make of that?
Well, what kind of a tank? What tank was he in?
Yeah.
I mean, and what irritates me so much is they show a photograph of Liverpool with boarded up houses. They don't show the beauty of Liverpool and everything that's happening here. And people are here because they want to be here. They're here because their family are here, their roots are here, their jobs here. Who is he to say, you have to go there to do anything? And why do they try to make cities be in competition with each other? We should surely complement each other rather than be in competition. Of course, you want to do well in things, but it's just crazy. And I can't imagine that, I don't know, as you say, think tank, but I think the think was out of it.
The premise that, you know, the money that's been spent on regeneration is wasted is just a nonsense, isn't it, when you look around what's going on in Liverpool now?
It's outrageous, and it's insulting, quite frankly. And they always do it to us, always. But we come up, don't we, smiling?
Well, that's our resilient spirit, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
That's what Liverpoolians are all about.
Yeah, we are. We're right there.
Rita, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Hope you have a fantastic night tonight down there at Fact. I'll be along there. I'm looking forward to seeing that film.
Thank you. And it's been a pleasure seeing you and talking to you again.
Lovely. That's my special guest in conversation this hour with Rita Tushingham. And she's in Liverpool for the showing of her film at Fact tonight. Puffball, I don't know whether there's any tickets left. I'm sure there probably aren't, but you never know. Anyway, coming up next, we're out of the studio and into the City Cafe, catching up with all the art and entertainment news. Frank Maudsley, my old mate, is joining us from Flock of Seagulls. He's playing a set ahead of his gig tomorrow at the stadium down there for the concert.